That's right. It's the Gas House Gang today. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji on the show this afternoon. We are glad that you are part of our day and glad to be part of yours. And we do this on a day in which the Cardinals have been officially eliminated from playoff contention with 1 3-game series left to go. The phone number is 314-436-7900. Messages, you can leave those on the Odyssey app, or if you want to watch us on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, you can do that, and you can leave a comment, and Bernie and I will see it, and maybe we'll get to some of those. On the show today, Dani Wexelman will be with us. She is with MLB Network Radio, also SNY TV, and Dani is a St. Louisan. So Danny's on the show. Jesse Rogers with ESPN covers baseball. He'll be with us at 12:30. And Jason Schwartz, who is the play-by-play announcer for the Springfield Cardinals, who just won the Texas League Championship at 12:45. So very packed today. And Bernie, we knew it was coming, but now it's officially here. The Cardinals season, even though they got 3 games left to go, there is no playoff pursuit any longer.
Well, they're playing the Cubs. I'd like to see the Cardinals, like, you know, sweep that series and just kind of shape up their record a little bit. Not that that matters. It just kind of looks better on paper, I guess, is a way to put it. But listen, we all know realistically why the Cardinals were in the race through the first one. They're, you know, up until the 159th game, which they lost and eliminated them. It wasn't because they were a great team. They did have some really outstanding qualities, like their persistence and their stubbornness and all those comeback wins and all that stuff. But the only reason they were even hanging around this late is because the New York Mets just kept, you know, spitting up the bit. Yep. You know, just they just kept, I could say some other things, but they just kept flopping around. The Cardinals just weren't good enough to take advantage of it. But they were a competitive team, and I respect the way they went about it. It was a very strange and very difficult set of circumstances, caught between the runway and a rebuild. And yay, but we're still trying to win. But no, you know, young players, rebuild, runway, Heim Bloom coming in, one guy, and John Mozeliak leaving. I mean, it's a very, very strange set of circumstances. So it was kind of hard to define exactly what this season, you know, if the priority really was, because there were kind of some mixed priorities.
Right. And that's the thing. We had Ollie for the last time on Tuesday, and it was one of the last things we said to him before we said goodbye that day. And it was, I promise, we're not going to use the word runway next year, because I think we all got pretty tired of using that, of talking about runway, because it... Not only did it didn't feel like a whole lot was accomplished there. There's still so much uncertainty, even with an entire runway season. So I know I said that we're going to be done with runway, but maybe we're not. Yeah, in 2026, there might still be a lot of runway players that we're talking about.
Absolutely. But at least we're going to have clarity, more clarity.
A little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, the Bloom regime moves in. And John Mozeliak was in a situation where, you know, he was in charge, but he also, you know, and I give him credit for this. He had to give, you know, bring Heim Bloom into the loop. And so you have basically two bosses, one leaving, one coming in, and they're working together. Now we know in 2026, there's going to be one, well, starting right after the season, there's going to be one baseball boss, and he's going to have his team of assistants working in a totally new front office, and they will be very, I think, very consistent in what their direction is, which is why Sonny Gray was talking last night, because he's been talking with Bloom, and he says, I know the direction we're going on, which is why he's suddenly, you know, letting it be known. Oh yeah. Yeah. He's willing to consider it being traded now. So, cause it's a rebuild, and we gotta, not you, not anybody at KMOX. We got to stop being afraid to say the word.
You know? I agree with you. I think it's okay to do that, because here's the thing. The fear has always been, if they say rebuild, and it's not just exclusive to the Cardinals, this is just about every team in baseball. The moment they use that word, their concern is people are just not going to show up. We say rebuild, that to the fan base means we're not going to be any good for the next couple of years, so they're not going to buy tickets. Now, that may happen, but I think if you give a clear direction to people and then people believe in your direction, I think they're going to have a lot more patience with you. So if they think you're on the right track, even if it's going to be thin for a year or two, they will get on board with that if they believe your plan is going to work.
And once they see evidence, even visual evidence, that there's some really good young talent on the way here. And I know, see, I can always read minds. Someone listening to us is saying, well, Bernie, we heard that about Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. Yeah, but Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman were not as prepared for the major leagues as well as all of the guys that Heim Bloom and Rob Serfolio, Larry Day, and Matt Pierpont, on and on and on. The way they're going to develop players in the minors is much more enhanced than the way players have been being developed in the minors. So don't lump in this new wave of prospects. Don't lump them in with Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. That's what I'm saying. But when you see a Liam Doyle graduate to the majors and a Quinn Matthews and a J.J. Weatherholt and a Joshua Baez, and there's a whole wave of starting pitchers behind the top two guys that we know about. And, I'm glad we're going to be talking about the Springfield Cardinals, because that team is loaded with talent.
Mm-hmm.
And is only, some of that talent could be on the way at some point to arrive in 2026.
Yep.
So when fans start to see new talent emerge, and I think everybody likes new talent, new faces, new players, freshness. If they can see, these guys actually can play. They're not ready to win, but you can see that they can play. They're pretty exciting. I mean, all of a sudden you have a starting rotation in a year and a half that's got like four guys who can strike people out. You got one guy who can do that now, So it's up to the Cardinals to provide the evidence that what they're doing is working, and they have to request for people's patience. If people don't want to be patient, that's their choice. But as I like to say, and people never have an answer, they never have a comeback. I say, well, everybody's freaking out about a rebuild, but what that means is Bill DeWitt's been a great owner, because this is 30 years mm-hmm. he's owned the club, and this is the first time anyone's even used the word rebuild. What does that say?
Well, I mean, Bernie, there are valid criticisms of things that have happened over the last decade or so. That's totally fair,
sure.
Because you could do that with pretty much any organization, but you cannot deny the success that was had up until recently and how extended it was, especially for this market. This is
right.
This is not a very big market. I mean, I would say that the Cardinals are an organization that is worth a lot of money, and they make a lot of money, and the more people who come through the gates gives them more money to spend. So they do have some resources here. It's not the Dodgers, it's not the Yankees, but they do have money to spend. But you cannot argue with the success they have actually had on the field for about a 20-year period.
They, even with, like they've missed the playoffs now 6 years of the last 10, and they haven't had much postseason success. And when I point to Bill DeWitt's 30-year track record, I do it because I think it's important to look at the entire picture and not just like sit around and go on X all day screaming about how bad it is and how bad Bill DeWitt is. And, this whole thing with it. Well, that's so true of our country. Everyone's just loaded with grievance. Everyone sees themselves as a victim. I just get tired of that. Even with the bad stuff baked in the last 10 years you alluded to, right? In Bill DeWitt's time as owner, the Cardinals, even with the stuff that's gone wrong, and it's their fault that it went wrong, by the way. I've said that a million times. The Cardinals still, since 1996, when he took over, have won more postseason games than any National League team. And only the Yankees and the Astros have played in more postseason games. That's the first 29 years, because the playoffs haven't started yet this year. But, I mean, so that's a pretty damn strong record when you have a down cycle, one that, again, you're responsible for. But you still have won more postseason games than anyone in the National League since the start of 1996. It's just unrealistic. Again, I'm mad that the Cardinals let it get to this point. It could have been avoided. But where I draw the line is because, listen, I don't have to act like some rabid animal just because the culture has changed. I don't have to erase everything that has been excellent about this franchise as if it never happened. You know,
yeah.
I draw the line with that crap. It doesn't play with me. You look at the whole body of work, but you also acknowledge they let this thing slip and they shouldn't have done that. I think both of those things are fair.
Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and by Anderson Hospital. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. When we come back, St. Louis and Danny Wexelman. You can hear her on Sirius XM, MLB Network Radio, SNY TV, ESPN. Danny is next on KMOX. Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Bernie Miklas with me. I'm Chris Ranji, and it is time to go to the guest line this afternoon. We got a lot of people coming up. Jesse Rogers joins us at 12:30. Jason Schwartz with the Springfield Cardinals at 12:45. They just won the Texas League. But right now, we are off to the guest line with Danny Wexelman, who is a reporter for ESPN. You can hear her on MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM, and SNY TV works there as well. And she is from St. Louis. Danny is with us on KMOX. And so I'll make you feel at home. What high school did you go to?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I always love to talk ball. I grew up in Wildwood. I went to Eureka High School. So I'm super proud. Yeah, Eureka High School. Shout out to Eureka.
That's way out there.
Well, I'm from Wildwood.
Yes, I know. Yes, I know.
We are way out there. Yeah.
I love Six Flags, by the way, and I hope we don't lose it. So, Danny, first things first, we Bernie and I have been talking about the fact that the New York Mets basically left the door open for all of these teams that even have a shot this year at getting to the playoffs. And the Cardinals were one of them up until pretty recently. The Giants were one of them. The Reds and Diamondbacks all getting to hang around, in part because the Mets just could not put it all together enough. What has happened in New York?
Yeah, it's been inconsistent. I mean, listen, when you have a pitching staff that can't even get you through five innings, you've got to call up three rookies because you're not getting length and you're taxing your bullpen. And on top of it, the offense has been really inconsistent. I just think that it's a year they're trying to figure a lot of things out. They've used the most pitchers in the league this year. When you don't have consistency, I think that that leads to instability, right? And you said it best, they left the door open. And so now, really, they control their own destiny. They have to win. They have to continue to win. They don't have a choice. They're finishing up with the Cubs. They've got the Marlins in Miami this weekend. The Marlins have played really, really good baseball here down the stretch. And I believe they're going to have to face Sandy Alcantara on Friday. I think that's how things line up. That'll probably be Sandy's last home game as well. Who knows what'll happen with him? The Cardinals are familiar with Sandy. But, yeah, it's just been inconsistent. And it's been frustrating when you watch them play. It doesn't make sense. They have a payroll that's the second most in all of baseball this year. They signed Juan Soto to basically $1 billion. And they just can't put it all together. And I just think it comes down to, you got to play guys in their positions, and you have to get length from your starters. And they haven't quite created that good recipe all season long. So if they get in, it's going to be tumbling and stumbling here.
Danny, Bernie Miklas here. First of all, thanks for joining us. Second of all, happy to make your acquaintance. And third of all, huge congratulations on your career success. And I think you have more jobs than I do, which is saying something because I'm working for everybody. But hey, can I ask you something personal, and then we'll get back to the baseball stuff. But seriously, you're doing so well, and I think everybody in St. Louis should be, you know, really proud of you. What was it that drew you to baseball? Because that's what you do a lot of. You do other sports too, but what was it that sort of put you on this track, not only loving sports, loving baseball, but wanting to pursue it for a career?
Well, Bernie, first of all, you weren't supposed to make me cry this morning. I don't know what's on your rundown right now. Let me return the favor to you as a kid growing up in St. Louis and reading your work and watching what you did for the hometown team, for St. Louis sports, and watching how it should be done. Let me say that first and foremost. I've been a fan since I could read. And I was a quick learner, Bernie, just so you know, very quick learner in the St. Louis school system. And to answer your question, which I always appreciate a chance to get to talk about that inspiration, that's my dad. My dad, Larry Wexelman, who grew up in U City and went to Mizzou. My dad loved sports. My dad instilled that in me. I grew up playing travel softball in St. Louis. I played under Brad Wallach for Eureka High School. I'm the luckiest kid in the whole world to have grown up there and learned to fall in love with the Cardinals. And Coach Wallach would take so many examples of the Cardinals when we were playing at Eureka. And I played with greats, right? Like, names known in St. Louis, like Maggie Viehaus was the leader of my team. Maggie Viehaus, an All-American at Michigan. I grew up with just exceptional people, but it's all from my dad. My dad was just the guiding light and the beacon for me. And if I failed, it was okay. And I learned constructive criticism and why the sport is so great and so important. So every fiber of what I do and how I do it, and hustling, Bernie, to your point, I do have a lot of jobs because I love it. I also have to pay rent in New York City. but yeah, it's my dad. My dad passed away when I was in high school. I think a lot of people know this, but, you know, he was everything to me. And so I just try to continue to keep his name and what he taught me moving forward.
Well, it's outstanding. It really is. And I keep up with you best that I can.
Thank you, Chris, so much.
Take it away, Chris. Well, I don't want to keep hogging.
Well, you guys already did all the compliments, and now I'm left out. You're doing great, too, Chris.
You're wonderful. Chris, no. You are wonderful.
Oh, hey, Danny, thank you
so
much.
You're a shining star. Yes.
I feel so much better now. Hey, no, listen, we want to get your opinion on, you know, we sort of touched on this playoff race already, and it's going to be a really fun weekend. First of all, you've got the Guardians who have just done something unbelievable, and actually the Tigers have done something unbelievable too. They will finish up their series tonight. The Guardians have taken over first place after being over 15 games back. And then, you know, you've got weekend series with the Reds and Brewers, and that series is going to matter. And Miami and New York, that's going to matter. Diamondbacks, Padres, you have some really big series this weekend.
It is so fun. This is the best time of the year. And it hurts my heart that the Cardinals aren't included in this conversation. And while, you know, they were for a moment there were some moments they could have been. The postseason will move on without them. But to your point, I think the fact that they expanded the playoffs a few years ago to 12 teams means that we get these sink your teeth into feisty races down the stretch. And the wild card really is wild because I love game 163. I thought that was one of the best things our sport had. And now it's the wild card round. It's the best of three. Anything could happen. And you're right. You do have the Guardians, whose starting pitching staff has been exceptional. They have Jose Ramirez, who some think might be an MVP, not this year, but one day he will be. And they have just been, they've played the best baseball amongst all the teams, and they deserve to be in the spot. This is exactly what Detroit did last year down the stretch, right? They snuck in. They made a run. Detroit, who's had one of the worst collapses we've ever seen, has to win every game here on out. They don't have the tiebreaker anymore with the Guardians. The Guardians now have that over them for the season, and so Cleveland has to lose, and the Tigers have to win. That's the only way right now that Detroit will either win the division, and also the Houston Astros are only one game back of them. They've also played below the standards of Houston. They know how to win, but they're without Yordan Alvarez right now, which is a huge blow to them. And then in the National League side, you mentioned is the Diamondbacks, who have gone through the gauntlet this week. They had to go through the Phillies, and then they had the Dodgers, and then they finished with the Padres, which is almost an impossible task for the Arizona. Who sold, like, don't forget, they sold at the trade deadline. Josh Naylor and Gino Suarez up in Seattle, they just clinched the American League West. And so Arizona, somehow, some way, without Merrill Kelly, they've found a way to keep themselves alive here, and the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds are really fascinating. I don't think that they're going to have a chance if they get to October, but Terry Francona is the best of the best, and if anyone knows how to do it, it would be Terry. So this is how postseason baseball should be. The Mets are stressing. Mets fans are stressing to the max because they haven't played good baseball. And for the AL side of things, Tigers fans, I get a lot of texts. I've got some family there. I know a lot of people who are Tigers fans. I feel for them right now because the Tigers were the best team in baseball for the last, call it, 5 months. And they have unraveled in a way that would make you throw up five times.
Well, it's a mess.
Danny, I got one more question, but tell your relatives in Detroit about the 2006 Cardinals, who at the end of the regular season, they had the worst starting pitching ERA in the National League. And the other thing, I remember talking to Rick Hummel, who's a lot more even keeled than I am. But I said, you know, Rick, are they even going to win a playoff game? I'm not even talking about a series because they were so bad down the stretch, and we all know what happened. But here's the question I have for you. Who's got the better chance of the two teams of making a run in the postseason? Would that be the Cubs or the Brewers, in your opinion?
Oh, I love that question. Great question. I'm all in on Milwaukee, guys. I think even now, at the end of the season, people are still questioning what kind of team they could be. Chicago's just hung around, right? They have owned that first wild card spot for most of the season. So that's impressive in itself, and they're getting a little bit more from their starters. Pico Armstrong, someone that I think so highly of, he has struggled down the stretch. That's affected them. Having Kyle Tucker miss some games and have this hamstring issue, that's affecting them. So Milwaukee, to me, is this. They're the ideal team. They have a lot of qualities and traits that the St. Louis Cardinals do. So I think Cardinals fans can understand it's frustrating. But what Milwaukee does so well and why they are primed to make a deep run is because 1 through 9 in their lineup can get the job done. They have seen things in players and made them better. Pat Murphy, their manager, brings out the best in them. And not to mention, they have a bona fide starting staff. I know they just lost Brandon Woodruff. I don't think that guy's going to pitch in the postseason with that right lat strain. But not only do they have the staff to do it, they have my favorite part of the postseason, which is the bullpen. They have a 3-4-5-headed monster of arms. Hopefully Trevor McGill comes back soon for them. But they have a ton of guys. Aaron Ashby, Abner Uribe, it goes on and on and on. They can get the job done for them. And then they're so selfless. Right? Like, they play for each other. They are egoless with Christian Yelich leading the way. They are primed to win a World Series this year. It is theirs for the taking. And to me, there's no way, like, unless they lose the game themselves, I don't see how they're going to lose in the postseason.
Danny Wexelman, you're great. And Eureka loves you. We know they do. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you. And let's talk again soon.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me. You guys are so wonderful. I have a soft spot for both of you and obviously St. Louis. So thank you for having me today.
That is Danny Wexelman, native of Eureka, also on MLB Network Radio and TV. You can see her there, SNY TV. You've seen her on ESPN as well. Well, we're not done with ESPN, though. We've got Jesse Rogers coming up next. Jesse is going to join the show when we come back. It is the Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on 104.1 FM KMOX.
The Cardinals have been eliminated officially from any postseason possibility.
Yeah, that happened last night. Lost to the Giants. They're off today. Back tomorrow. And it is the finale of the season for the Cardinals. They will play at Wrigley Field against the Cubs after noon game tomorrow. It's a 1:21 pitch. And then they'll play Saturday, Sunday, all afternoon games. And that's going to be it. That is it for the 2025 season. Time to go back to the guest line on the Gas House Gang. We bring in Jesse Rogers, baseball insider for ESPN, who's with us now. Good afternoon, Jesse.
Afternoon. What's happening, Chris? What's happening down there?
Yeah. So we've got a situation here where the playoffs are, it's not going to happen for the Cardinals. So we kind of knew this was going to happen, and now it's about looking ahead for them, really. And we've heard Sonny Gray sound like he was open to being traded. He's got the no trade clause. Nolan Arenado over the weekend said he basically expects to not be back next year. Who would be interested in those two guys, do you think?
Well, there's probably plenty still interested in Sonny Gray. I mean, Nolan Arenado is a different animal considering, you know, the production and contract things and, who's got an opening at third base. Would he go to a team that is not really a contender? I mean, there's a lot of question marks with Nolan Arenado that probably can't be answered in this moment in time. You know, Sonny Gray, I think, would have some you know, suitors for sure. I mean, I think you could just look around the league. Everyone's looking for pitching all the time. What is it, 1 year left on his deal with some options? Is that right?
One option. Yeah. In 27.
So, I mean, you could find definitely a suitor for Sonny Gray. Nolan Arenado is a lot more complicated, though.
Jesse, Bernie Miklas, always great to talk to you, man. Keep up the great work as always. I'm going to ask you one more Cardinals question. It was a confusing season. It was confusing the way they laid it out. Runway, reset, transition, all these different titles. They put Ali Marmol in a situation where, you know, managers are they have the DNA in them. They got to win games, try to win games. But he had to make different decisions, play guys who probably, some of whom didn't even deserve to be playing because of this runway stuff. So given the confusion of this season, if you look at where they are, they're going to finish under 500, but not by a bad amount. How do you think in the context of how this season was laid out, how do you think they did with it? Better than you expected, worse than you expected, about the same as you expected?
I would actually say probably better. It's a tough needle to thread that the instructions Ali was given going into this year. And I think he did a pretty good job with it. I do think you guys learned a lot about some of those young guys and gave them the runway, but the bottom didn't fall out on the team. Like you didn't bottom out with 100 losses. I wrote about the Rockies today. I mean, you don't want to be them, right? You don't want to be the White Sox of last year. So if this is kind of a transition phase and Chaim Bloom has a plan to get back to competing for playoffs, you know, very quickly here, then you're going to look back at this season as kind of a success, that you didn't need to bottom out and start a 5-year rebuild. So as strange as, and I was at spring training when Ali talked about all this, as strange as his marching orders were, they kind of accomplished some things there and didn't look too bad doing it. So probably, I always thought that was going to be hard after I heard Ali talk about it in March, but they probably achieved it better than I thought. So, but it's where you go from here that'll be interesting. Is if they continue to go backwards, then this transition year really transitioned only to more losing. If they bounce back from it, and Bloom has some great plan, and I always said the idea of an executive in waiting is amazing. He had 2 years really, but a full year to watch and learn and make some decisions in his own head without having to face the media and actually execute anything just yet. So I think Chaim can hit the ground running. It's rare you get an instance where executive leaves on his own terms, assuming that's what's happened here, and you have the other guy waiting in the wings. So I think all in all, it's not so bad, but the future will tell the story even more.
We know about the exit from Boston and how that was all weird, but what is the national perspective on Chaim Bloom?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a little bit of a stink, you know, how things went down in Boston. But Boston's a pressure cooker. He's not the only executive to leave there and have sort of a bad rep. I mean, he certainly had a good rep going into Boston. So let's see, is there the good Bloom or the bad Bloom out there? The truth is probably somewhere in between. We see some of his draft picks from Boston actually helping them out. So I think the overall tenor is he's got some talent. He understands what he's doing, but yet hasn't had the results just yet. So many times, whether it be manager, executive, your second job is going to go better than the first. You learn so much more. I also think that Boston can be unique in a lot of ways. So let's see how this plays out. I think you got to give him a little bit of a clean slate, even if you have sort of a negative tone coming from Boston. But I do like the idea that he's had a little time there behind the scenes with John Mozeliak, who knows what he's doing, to sort of guide him a little bit as well. So I think he's set up to do well here. You want ownership to spend some money when called upon, and I'm sure they will at some point here. So I think he's got a good chance to have success there.
Jesse Rogers with us from ESPN, and he's based in Chicago and knows the pulse of that city as anybody in sports media. But I wanted to ask you this. Cardinals and Cubs are going to be wrapping it up. It's going to be fun to watch them play. How nervous are Cubs fans? You know, it's been turbulent for the Cubs. Like, there's all these things started happening, you know. You can tell us about that. But all these things suddenly started going wrong. What's the confidence level among the fan base in the Cubs going into the postseason?
I think it's okay. I really do. They lost 5 games after clinching. Okay, maybe that was one or two too many, but that's not a big deal. They've had an up and down second half at the plate. That's a bigger concern. These last couple nights against the Mets, they perform well, but the Mets can't pitch. So I think there's a little uneasiness about their offense. There's days where it looks great and other days not so much. You could probably say that about the Padres, though, their first round opponent. Cade Horton, one of their top pitchers, rookie of the year candidate, is having a little back issue. So he's questionable next week already. So But look, the Padres just lost Liriano to a fractured finger. No one's perfect at this time of year, health-wise. And there's no real super teams. I mean, we're not going to have a 100-win team. Starts over next week. I think you can make a case for the Cubs. You can make a case against the Cubs. You could probably do that for, I don't know, 10 of 12 teams in the playoffs. So, Bernie, it's that uneasiness any fan base would have when you're a little unsure heading into the postseason about this guy or that guy. But they'll have home field advantage in that first round. I think that could be the difference maker.
Last night was a pretty amazing night in baseball. We saw the Aaron Judge hit his 50th. We saw Cal Raleigh hit 59 and 60 home runs on the season. And that's never happened where two players have hit 50 or 60 on the same night. So who's going to be the MVP this year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Raleigh. I don't have an MVP vote, so I don't mind saying that if I did, I would vote for him. I thought that even a week ago. I just think that it's close enough that you have to consider the position he plays, the fact that he's a switch hitter, the fact that he's doing it at a pitcher-friendly ballpark. I think you add all that up. I put catcher at the top of that list. We will never see you never say never, but the idea of a catcher doing this is just unheard of. The amount of abuse they take behind the plate and to do it from both sides of the plate, that skill is not the easiest thing. I think you give Raleigh his due this year, and Judge will win it probably again the next year. You know, this is just a magical year for this kid, and you got to give it to him.
Jesse Rogers, ESPN, covering baseball. We appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
You got it. Chris, Bernie, be well. Have a good offseason.
That is Jesse Rogers from ESPN. I've got Bernie Miklas here, and as we get to break, we're going to talk about the AA Springfield Cardinals when we come back. They just won the Texas League. That's right, the Springfield Cardinals, AA affiliate of your St. Louis Cardinals with the Texas League Championship. And to discuss that with us now is Jason Schwartz, Springfield Cardinals play-by-play announcer here on 104.1 FM KMOX. The Gas House Gang, Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. Jason, congrats. How are you?
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on. I'm doing all right, although you'll have to excuse my voice after a long season and then a night of celebrating the title last night. It finally decided to give out on me a little bit, but I guess it couldn't have come at a better time.
Hey, Jason, Bernie here. Listen, you had a great seat to watch really one of the best minor league seasons a Cardinals affiliate has ever had. I mean, Springfield was outstanding this year in every area. What made them so special? And I guess what I'm trying to get at is, you know, a lot of those guys are pretty getting closer to St. Louis. And what do you think some of those guys on the team, their impact is going to be long-term on the Cardinals? I mean, a team that good, there's obviously a lot of talent on that team.
I mean, the one thing that really stood out to me this year, and I know it's cliche, but it really was just such a great group and such a great clubhouse. There was a culture of winning, I felt like, from the very beginning. It was a pretty experienced team at the start of the season with a number of guys who had already had experience in Springfield. And then, of course, you add your J.J. Weatherholtz and your Nathan Churches and Tekoa Roby and all the guys who eventually went up. But that culture just stayed in place all season. And, you know, they won 43 games in the first half to clinch a playoff spot and didn't let up at all. They followed that up with a 45 win second half. And, you know, they didn't do it by blowing out their opponents, night in, night out. It was really good pitching. They finished with the best ERA in the league, the top two ERAs individually with Eshawn Henderson and Bryson Motz. And they just played better baseball than their opponents on most nights. And that's how they ended up putting together an 88-win season.
We know that of all the guys at AA, and there's a lot of talent there, as Bernie mentioned, that J.J. Weatherholtz, the guy that Cardinals fans are already talking about, and they want to see him play. As you watched his season unfold, what did you think of his progress from start to finish?
Yeah, well, you know, we actually, he left us in early July. July 6th was when he got called up to AAA. But he's just different. You know, in the minor leagues, you see guys come through, and there are a lot of talented players. You have to be talented to be a AA baseball player. But some guys are just different. You know, they're just built for the next level and the level after that. And J.J. Weatherholtz, one of those guys. You know, the ball comes off his bat different. The way he approaches his at-bats, his feel for the strike zone. So, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen, but he went up to AAA and he put up better numbers in Memphis than he did in Springfield.
And you know what, Jason? When we talk to him, man, he just gets it. Like, I don't know what it was, and maybe he's just really good at interviews, but he seems to get it. He seems to get baseball and what it takes.
Totally, yeah. He's your prototypical baseball guy. Loves the game, cares about the game, cares about his craft in playing the game. So, you know, St. Louis is lucky to have J.J. Weatherholt coming pretty soon.
A guy that I've been tracking is Joshua Baez, because for people listening, just a brief history. Cardinals drafted him in the second round out of high school in 2021. That's the year after they drafted, you know, Jordan Walker and a couple of these other guys we know. And they said at the time, Randy Flair said at the time, you know, it's going to take him a while. It's really going to take him a while, but we believe he could really turn into something special. And it did take him a while. He struggled in the minors. This year, it's like, uh-oh, he figured all this stuff out. And you had the best view of him, but it looks like the Cardinals have something there. And tell us about him, your impressions of Joshua Baez.
You know, I think the number that stands out for Baez the most is he was one of only two guys in all of minor league baseball at any level to put together a 20 home run, 50 stolen base season. And the other guys, like the top prospect in the Pirates organization and like one of the top five in all of baseball. So there are some really special tools there. He's one of those guys where the ball comes off his bat at 114, 115 miles per hour. You know, the exit velo is there. So I think with Baez, you know, he's just such an athlete. He's got great speed, incredible power. Saw his feel at the plate really come together this year. You know, he got up to Double A. He was really hot. Then they seemed to figure him out. He went about a month or so where he was struggling. He was striking out a lot. And then from the end of July on, you know, things changed. And his plate discipline, you know, his feel for the strike zone, and just the at-bats he was putting together, it changed. But, you know, he's got to work on his outfield defense. He's got a great arm. And then, you know, just kind of learning the game. You know, he's got speed on the bases, but learning how to steal bases at higher levels when teams are better at defending the running game. But man, I mean, he has got some really special tools.
Jason, other than the guys that we're talking about, Baez and Weatherholt and, you know, the usual names, it's not unheard of for a Double-A guy to make a jump pretty quickly. Is there somebody that you think we should be on the lookout for that maybe we're not talking about?
I definitely think on the pitching side, you know, Eshawn Henderson was the Texas League Pitcher of the Year this year. He led the league in ERA at 2.59. He almost set a Springfield Cardinals record for ERA, second best ever. That guy is really fun to watch. He's from California. He's got this laid back attitude on the mound, but a fiery competitor when he needs to be. He's a lefty, great slider. He was a lot of fun to watch this year. And then Bryson Moss is another guy. He was one of the four Texas League postseason All Stars. He finished with a 2.98 ERA this year. He was our winning pitcher last night in the clinching game. Actually, both those guys won the last two games to give the Cardinals the championship. And then Luis Gastelum is a righty out of the bullpen with a devastating changeup. You know, the pitching carried the Cardinals this year in Springfield. And, you know, those are some guys who I'm really excited to see at the next level and eventually in the big leagues.
Jason Schwartz, we know you got a lot to celebrate there. Really cool thing, the Springfield Cardinals winning the Texas League. We appreciate your time today. Thank you for jumping on, and safe travels back from Texas.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Anytime. Appreciate it.
That is Jason Thanks. Schwartz, Springfield Cardinals play-by-play announcer. Again, they won the Texas League, and so that's a very big deal. And, yeah, there's some good talent there. Cardinals are starting to really replenish that system, and we're going to be keeping an eye on that all offseason, next season, and see what Heim Bloom does with his tenure. Bernie Miklas, we will do this again next week, Tuesday. You'll be with me and yeah. And Tom.
Go Bears, I got to say that.
Yeah.
in your honor.
Thank
go
you,
Bears.
Man. Go yeah. Bears. You're going to beat the Raiders. Come on, the Raiders
yeah.
stink.
Yeah, that was impressive Sunday. It was
That's
very
right.
impressive. It was.
I mean, the Cowboys defense sucks, but hey, well, I'll take it. I'll take it. Small yeah. steps. Bernie, we love you, man. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. Back tomorrow with Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly at 12 o'clock. If you missed this show or anything on it, you can go back and get the podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. The Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and by Anderson Hospital.